to control her, carrot and stick. Departure minus 2 hours. Eberle chose to stand with his back to the oblong window of the observation blister. Beyond its thick quartz, the stars were swinging by slowly as the mammoth habitat revolved lazily along its axis. The moon would slide into view, so close that one could see the smoothed launching pads of Armstrong Spaceport blackened by decades of rocket blasts, and the twin humps of Cellini's two buried public plazas, as well as the vast pit where workers were constructing a third. Some claimed they could even see individual tractors and the cable cars speeding along their overhead lines to outlying settlements, such as Hell Crater and the Farside Observatory. Eberle never looked out if he could help it. The sight of the moon, the stars, the universe constantly swinging past his eyes made him sick to his stomach. He kept his back to it. Besides, his work, his future, his destiny was inside the habitat, not out there. Standing before him, facing the window with apparently no ill effect, stood a short, heavy-set woman wearing a gaudy, finger-length tunic of many shades of red and orange over shapeless beige slacks. Sparkling rings adorned most of her fingers, and more jewelry decorated her wrists, earlobes, and double-chinned throat. Ruth Morgenthau was one of the small cadre of people the Holy Disciples had planted in the habitat. She had not been coerced into this one-way mission to Saturn, Eberle knew. She had volunteered. Beside her was a lean, short, sour-faced man wearing a shabby pseudo-leather jacket of jet black. "Malcolm," said Morgenthau, gesturing with a chubby hand, "may I introduce Dr. Sammy Viborg?" She turned slightly. "Dr. Viborg, Malcolm Eberle." "I am very pleased to meet you, sir," said Viborg in a reedy nasal voice. His face was little more than a skull with skin stretched over it, prominent teeth, narrow slits of eyes. Eberle accepted his extended hand briefly. "Doctor of what?" he asked. "Education, from the University of Wittenberg." The host of a smile touched Eberle's lips. "Hamlet's University?" Viborg grinned toothily. "Yes, if you can believe Shakespeare. There is no mention of the Dane in the university's records. I looked." Morgenthau asked, "The records go back that far?" "They are very sketchy, of course." "I'm not interested in the past," Eberle said. "It's the future that I am working for." Viborg nodded. "So I understand." Eberle glanced sharply at Morgenthau, who said hastily, "I have explained to Dr. Viborg that our task is to take charge of the habitat's management once we get underway." "Which will be in 2 hours," Viborg added. Eberle focused his gaze on the little man, asking, "I have seen to it that you are highly placed in the communications department. Can you run the entire department if and when I ask you to?"
"There are two very prominent persons above me in the department," Viborg replied, "neither of whom are believers."
"I know the organization chart," Eberle snapped. "I drafted it myself. I had no choice but to accept those two secularists above you. But you are the one I have chosen to run the department. Can you do it?"
"Of course," Viborg added without hesitation. "But what will become of my superiors?"
"You can't ship them home once we get started," Morgenthau pointed out, a smile dimpling her cheeks. "I will take care of them," Eberle said firmly, "when the proper moment comes. For now, I want to know that I can rely on you."
"You can," said Viborg.
"Completely and utterly. I want total loyalty."
"You will have it," Viborg said firmly.
Then he smiled again and added, "If you can make me head of communications."
"I will."
Morgenthau smiled, satisfied that these two men could work together and further the cause that she had given her life to serve.
Holly was getting frantic. She had searched everywhere for Malcolm, from his austere little office to the other cubbyholes in the human resources section, then down the corridors in the other sections of the administration building, no sign of him anywhere. "He'll miss the breakout," she kept telling herself. She had it all planned out. She would take Malcolm to the lakeside site down at the edge of the village. Professor Wilmot and his managers had arranged more than a dozen spots around the habitat where people could gather and watch the breakout ceremonies on big vid screens that had been set up out in the open. The lakeside was the best spot, Holly thought, the prettiest and closest to their offices. But Malcolm was nowhere to be found. Where could he be? What's he doing? He'll miss everything. People were streaming along the paths towards the assembly areas where the big screens had been set up, couples and larger groups, chatting, smiling, nodding hello to her. Holly ignored them all, searching for Eberly. And then she saw him, striding along the path from the woods with that overweight Morgenthau woman beside him. Holly frowned. He's spending a lot of time with her, she thought. But a smile broke across her face as she watched them. Morgenthau was puffing hard, trying to keep up with Malcolm's longer strides. Serves her right, Holly thought, as she started down the path to intercept them and bring Malcolm over to the shore of the lake. She wanted him standing beside her as the habitat started its long flight to Saturn. Nobody else, she told herself. He's got to stand with me. Sitting up in bed, Pancho Lane stared unhappily at the hologram image of Goddard hanging in space. It appeared as if one half of her bedroom had disappeared, to be replaced by the darkness of space with a miniature habitat floating in the middle of the scene, revolving slowly. The moon edged into view, pockmarked and glowing brightly. Pancho could see the laser beacon that marked the top of Mount Jaeger, just above Selene, not all that far from her own bedroom. "She's really doing it," Pancho grumbled to herself. "Sis is really going off on that dang tin can, getting as far away from me as she can. I saved her life. I broke my butt paying her medical expenses and the cryonics and all that. I nursed her and taught her and wiped her shitty ass. Now she goes traipsing off into the wild black yonder. That's gratitude. That's a sister's love." Yet she couldn't work up real anger. She knew that Susie needed to break away, needed to start her own life, independently. Every kid's got to go out on her own, sooner or later. Hell, I did myself when Susie was just a preteen. Not Susie, she remembered. She calls herself Holly now. Got to remember that when I call her. Holly. Well, if things don't work out for her, I'll send a torch ship out to bring her home. All she's got to do is ask. I'll fly out to her myself, by damn. The holographic view of Goddard winked out, replaced by a life-sized image of Professor Wilmot. To Pancho, watching from her bed, it seemed as if the man's head and shoulders hovered in mid-air across her bedroom. "Today we embark on an unprecedented voyage of discovery and exploration," Wilmot began in a slow, sonorous voice. "Blah, blah, blah," Pancho muttered. She muted the sound with a voice command, then ordered her phone to get her security chief. "I just hope Wendell got somebody really good to keep an eye on Sis. If he hasn't, I'll toss him out on his butt, no matter how good he's in bed."
"Viborg makes a good addition to our cadre," Morgenthau said as she walked beside Eberly, heading back to the lakeside village. Eberly brushed at a brilliant monarch butterfly that fluttered too close to his face. "He's ambitious, that's clear enough." "There's nothing wrong with ambition," said Morgenthau, "as long as he can follow orders." "He will, I'm sure." Inwardly, Eberly had his doubts. "But I've got to work with the material at hand," he told himself. "Morgenthau has practically no ambition, no drive for self-aggrandizement. That makes her a perfect underling. Viborg is something else. I'll have to watch him closely, and my back as well." To Morgenthau, he said, "Information is the key to power. With Viborg and communications, we'll have access to all the surveillance cameras in the habitat." "And he could help us to tap into the phones as well," Morgenthau added. "I want more than that. I want every apartment bugged with surveillance cameras. Secretly, of course." "Every apartment? That's... whew, it's a tremendous task." "Find a way to do it," Eberly snapped.
Holly tried not to run. She didn't want to appear that anxious, but the closer she